You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Humorist and Texas populist Jim Hightower stopped by our studio today here in Washington. He's the former Agricultural Commissioner of Texas and the author of numerous books, including If the Gods Had Meant Us to Vote, They Would Have Given Us Candidates. We asked him about one's patriotic duty to dissent.
The very first responsibility of democracy, you know, Günter Grass, the Nobel Prize-winning author over in Germany, once said that the first job of a citizen is to keep your mouth open. But as you know and I know and a lot of our listeners know, sometimes it helps if that mouth is attached to a brain. And so that's the importance of having shows like yours, of getting information, knowing what it is we're talking about, but daring to put it forward. That's the most important thing, because mm-hmm. that's what citizenship really is. It's not just you have a right to go vote, mm-hmm. which, as we know, can be fairly meaningless in a lot of instances. But our job is to be the little d Democrats in this country that fight for the very freedoms that they're now taking from us in the name of preserving freedom.
There's a fairly well-known Texan who was a humorist and an activist who once said that to be an agitator is you want to finish that
yes,
sentence
I can
for
do
me?
That. that the agitator is the center post in the washing machine that gets the dirt out.
Yes,
and
indeed.
We need a whole lot more of that. That's what agitation is. They try to make that term a pejorative, you know, agitator. Our workers were perfectly happy until those outside agitators came in, or poor people didn't mind living up against the toxic waste dump until those agitators started messing with their minds. Well, of course, agitation is what built America. We wouldn't have America except that somebody dared to question authority and then to question the answers and then to put their butts and their lives on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think it's so important in this particular time, this age of bourgeois, as I call it, for agitators to step forward, because they're trying. Too many people have fought and bled and died before us to make it possible for us to dissent. And if we be quiet now, then Bush and his plutocratic, autocratic pals win and democracy loses.
Well, a lot of people have stepped forward, and a lot of people have put their bodies on the line. They've climbed up on bridges to hang banners. Some were actually in France, I believe, recently cut down. Mm-hmm. One gentleman was quite seriously injured. Here in this country, there were those who demonstrated, and the police shot rubber bullets at them here in this country, in California, about a month or so ago. And a lot of those agitators and activists are in jail now, or will be soon, doing time for simply exercising their rights as citizens.
Democracy is not something we were given. It's not something we can take for granted. Democracy is us, and the powers that be consistently try to take it back from us, including, as you're indicating, police action. It's not easy doing this. There's that old B.B. King song of nobody likes you but your mama, and she might be jiving you too. But, you know, we can all get to feeling like that sometimes. But this is what it has taken throughout history by the abolitionists and the suffragists and the populists and the wobblies, the labor movement, civil rights movement, environmental movement, women's movement. All of that has come through pain, mm-hmm. through people willing to do exactly that, have real bullets, or, by the way, rubber bullets has such a soft connotation to us.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
actually very hard rubber bullets, mm-hmm. and they can not only be painful but can do serious harm. So, you know, people have in the past paid the price, and people now are paying the price. And that's the very encouraging thing that I find, is that in this age of bourgeois, in this age of when what I call the wobblycrats are failing to stand up and be a party of opposition, out in the countryside, in our cities, people are standing up and are fighting back. I come to you as a progressive optimist in this weird time,
mm-hmm.
Because I'm able to get out in the countryside and travel a lot and visit with people who are making these fights.
Do you get a lot of resistance or hate mail or a strong response to some of the things you're saying? I mean,
sure. mean, okay. And you do too. you know, anybody who stands up and speaks out gets both strong opposition, but very strong support too. And I'm happy to say that the support is overwhelming against those who have a knee-jerk kind of right-wing response to it. And it's kind of interesting because a lot of the right-wing assault that comes my way is actually not conservative at all if you think of true conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the conservatism that's based in the Bill of Rights.
Which would be to protect an individual's right to allow them to be proven guilty before a court of law, before they are detained.
And to have their
without
say.
Without access to an attorney.
Right, exactly.
To have their say.
Right.
What are some of the things that are disturbing you most, Jim Hightower, as you travel about the country in this era of bourgeois, as you call it?
Well, the most disturbing thing is the overall impact of what is taking place in our country. I had a guy come up to me recently. It was at an art event. It wasn't political at all. And this guy recognized me and came over and said hello, and we were making small chit-chat. And suddenly he kind of clutched my arm and with bright eyes looked me right in the eye and said, "They're changing America, aren't they?" And that's fundamentally what's happening. This is not about changing an environmental regulation here, giving a tax cut to the rich over there. They are using the autocratic power of the presidency and the weakness of the Congress and the courts to turn our democracy into their plutocracy and autocracy.
But the American people are playing a role in allowing them to do this. Take, for example, the fact that they have not found any weapons of mass destruction.
Hello.
Many of the polls say that the majority of the American people really don't care that they haven't, as long as they got rid of that evil Saddam Hussein.
Well, that's the failure of the polls, but it's fundamentally the failure of the political process that does not have a lever for people to pull and a strong voice going out to people saying, by the way, they can't seem to find these weapons of mass destruction that was the rationale for thousands of people dying in Iraq and many people continuing to die right now.
So you think that if the American people were fully aware of that, that
absolutely.
They would be enraged, outraged,
there's
upset?
There's a poll out today that shows that there's a dramatic increase in the number of people who now are concerned that we can't seem to find the weapons of mass destruction. So once the information begins to get out, once people begin to see, wait a minute, this is a fundamental question about the integrity of the President of the United States and this administration and the whole system, because it's not just the Bush White House. The Democrats failed to ask the right questions. The media didn't just roll over. The media became cheerleaders, drum beaters behind this attack.
It now appears as though the mainstream media has decided to fall out of lockstep
mm-hmm.
and ask some of the critical questions.
And that's why the polls begin to change, once mm-hmm. people begin to see different information. I think people had it anyway in their heads. They thought, is what I'm thinking actually true?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't they find those weapons of mass destruction?
Do you think, Jim Hightower, that the president lied to the American people? I realize that's asking you to climb into his head and figure out what his intentions were, but what's your assessment of all this?
I've just written a little piece on Bush's head in which he doesn't think of himself as a liar. He's a deflector of truth, kind of like a Teflon pan rejects sticky food. He rejects the truth, and he's had a life of doing this. A person born of privilege, yet pretending to be just a regular Joe. You know, mm-hmm. a regular Joe who, in prep school, by the way, regular Joes don't go to prep school, mm-hmm. but in prep school had a C average and still got into Yale University, perhaps because his grandfather was on the board of trustees at the time and his daddy had gone there and they were contributors.
That's not affirmative action.
No.
Okay.
This is just the entitlement of the rich man's mm-hmm. Quota system.
I'm not sure quite what the difference is.
I'm sure that they could explain it if they ever sat down and thought about it, but they don't get bothered by things like irony and hypocrisy. But another example is, you know, here Bush is Mr. Commander-in-Chief with his landing on that aircraft carrier in the Top Gun suit and looking tough.
We all saw that.
Sending people to die and et cetera. But when it was George's time to go to war, he dodged that opportunity. And this is what I mean by him being a deflector. He wouldn't consider himself a liar because during the campaign he said, nobody in my family intervened to get me into the Air National Guard in Texas so I could defend Houston against the Viet Cong instead of going to Vietnam. And the fact that I jumped over about 100,000 other young men who were trying to get into the National Guard at the time. He cut into the line at the very top. But that's the deflection. Mm-hmm. The truth is, no. His daddy didn't make the phone call. The neighbor of his daddy, who's an oil man in Houston, made the phone call to the Speaker of the Texas House of Representatives, who then called the head of the Air National Guard.
I see, yes. Yeah. Well, then that's perfectly understandable.
It's not a lie.
No, it's not. You think he'd own up to being a deflector of the truth?
No, I don't think he owns up to much in his life. But again, you know, who really wants to probe the head? The result is, of course, that the president is lying, and he continues to this day. And now they're deflecting again, of course, by saying, well, he had weapons of mass destruction. We're pretty sure he had a program. Well, that's not what he said when he was rallying us to go to war. Mm-hmm. He said, not only does Saddam have weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons and the ability to launch those weapons to the United States, and we can't wait for a mushroom cloud to hit America. Mm-hmm. So it was very specific.
Not just a weapons program.
Exactly.
That they are
sometime
now
in
saying.
The past, maybe.
But now, Jim Hightower, is it a little bit unpatriotic, un-American of us, irresponsible to be sitting here and referring to the chief of this country in such tones that we're using?
Well, the emperor has no clothes, and he not only has no clothes, he's buck naked and butt ugly. it's the unique beauty of America that not only can we say these things, but we must. When these vain and aspiring people like Bush, Cheney, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, Howling Paul Wolfowitz, and others seize our government and begin to create something that is un-American, then it is the duty of Americans to step forward.
What about the troops? We have to support the troops.
Well, of course. The problem is we don't support the troops. The grunts, who are actually the ones who have to go door to door, you know, in Afghanistan, they had to pay for their own backpacks. They had to pay for some of their own equipment because the grunts are underfunded. We spend all our military dollars on these high-tech weapon systems that we get to see on CNN like it's a video game. But in fact, we're not supporting the troops even in war. They are so underfunded.
What do you mean they had to pay for their own backpacks?
They literally had to buy straps, the cushion straps, socks that they
needed. Out of their military pay?
Yeah, which, by the way, is a pittance. It's right around $15,000 a year. That includes combat pay.
And so if they couldn't afford to pay for their own backpack, then they go into combat without one?
Yeah. I mean, it's astonishing. I mean, the Army leadership was appalled at this. Pointing out that the cost overrun of one weapon system this year was $620 million, I believe it was, and that would be enough to equip all of the ground troops that we count on, the Army grunts, as they are known, to be over there. Yet we're shortchanging them, the very people whose lives literally are on the line and who are still in Iraq and Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. We don't support them. We don't support them when they come home, as we learned from the Vietnam War with the people damaged by Agent Orange and the first Iraqi War damaged with the Gulf War syndrome. Mm-hmm. And these soldiers are going to face some of the same thing. While Bush was sending the troops over, his budget cut the educational money that went to the local school systems that had to provide education for the children of troops. So support the troops, yes. I support the troops, and I want more support of the troops, both while they're going over there and then when they come home. Supporting of veterans who put their lives on the line, I think, is an important thing.
How do you feel about the flag these days?
I love the flag. When September 11th happened, I've got a newsletter called the Hightower Lowdown that comes out monthly, little pops of populism. And right after that, I wrote a piece about don't let them steal the flag, because the flag stands for dissent. It stands for the very freedoms that they are now going to reach out and try to take away in the name of patriotism. And that flag does not belong to the xenophobes and the militarists and the corporatists and the globalizers. It belongs to us.
They stolen it?
I don't think they got away with it this time. They have in the past stolen it, and they try, of course, to wrap themselves in their greed-headed legislation that the corporations are taking out of the nation's capital, all wrapped in the name of terrorism and patriotism and the flag. Never has so much bunting been used to cover up so much unpatriotic activity. I don't think so, because one thing, a lot of the progressive organizations refuse to let them have it. I know I've been part of something we call the Rolling Thunder Down Home Democracy Tour that has been going around the country holding democracy festivals.
That's not a bunch of motorcyclists.
Well, you can come on a motorcycle if you want, but you can walk in too. However you can get there, crawl in if you want.
I heard Rolling Thunder and I just automatically thought.
Well, we had a little Rolling Thunder last night, right? The thunder brings the rain that greens up the crops. This is a natural phenomena, and so that's why we named this the Rolling Thunder Down Home Democracy Tour. And at those events, we fly the flag very, very proudly and point to that flag and say, it's ours.
What are trickle-up politics, Jim Hightower?
Percolate-up, really. It's the opposite of trickle-down. Trickle-down politics and economics says that the elites should make the decisions and that us riffraff, the 80% majority that basically feels kicked out and stomped on, should just wait. An example, obviously, being the tax cuts for the rich. And by the way, those aren't just tax cuts. That is taking our money, the public's money, out of our public treasury and giving it to the already super rich, enriching them further under the notion magically that somehow or other they will spend that in such wise ways that it will generate economic activity and ultimately trickle down on you and me. Well, that, again, is not what democracy is. We are not passive receivers of their largesse. We are a democratic people, and our economy and our politics ought to not be about trickle down, but percolate up, invest in the ordinary workaday people in this country, and they will generate genuine economic activity that might create a few millionaires, but it will also create a healthy economy and a healthy society.
Mm. You're a Texan.
I am.
The president's a Texan.
Sort of.
Do you play Dixie Chicks music?
I do, very proudly. Well, I like all music, basically, and I had not been that big of a fan or even paying that much attention to the Dixie Chicks until they made the statement in England and then got this incredible backlash from, engineered in part by Clear Channel Radio operatives. But the interesting thing about this is that the media would have you believe that this destroyed the career of the Dixie Chicks, that there was so much opposition to it that it just wrecked them. That's not true. Their album went to number one on the country charts, and you can't get a ticket to a Dixie Chick concert. They're sold out well in advance. And sure, there are a few protest signs, but that's what America's about. That's all right. But the fans pour out, so they did not suffer as a result of standing up, because that's what they're trying to say. If we can smash the Dixie Chicks, if we can smash Michael Moore, as they also tried to do because he made that statement at the Academy Awards, yet the result of him making that statement was his book, which had dropped to maybe number 8 on the New York Times bestsellers, went back to number 1 the next week. His movie became the most requested movie at the video stores, outdoing even Chicago, which had won the big Academy Award. Standing up, they want us to believe, results in bad things happening to you. But in fact, in those two very prominent cases, good things happened.
So it's all a charade that's sort of crafted by places or organizations, media conglomerates like Clear Channel, which owns about 1,300 radio stations across the country. They would have most Americans believe that everyone is lining up behind the president in this country and that all those protesters
right.
are from other countries and just a few
right.
Fringe people here in this country.
Right.
It's all a mirage.
Well, it is. As you know from your show, this peace movement that sprang up over the initial talk of an Iraqi invasion by Bush came spontaneously. This was not orchestrated by some national organization. The local leaders, I know in Austin, Texas, where I live, the first big rally that had 10,000 people at it back in January was organized by a woman who had never been in a protest in her life. And I met her once and prior to this meeting, and she said, "Well, I'm actually putting this thing together." Said, "I've never done anything like this in my life, and I don't think I'm the one to do it, but nobody else was doing it, so I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to, so I'm it." And that's what's happened, not only in this country but throughout the world. There's no leader that is making this happen. We're creating leaders, and that's the exciting part of it. But yeah, the authorities and their apologists in the media, in the Democratic Party, want us regular nobodies to think we're nobodies and to think that we have no power and that if we do stand up, then bad things are going to happen to us, that Bush has this juggernaut. But in fact, you know, Bush is only supported in this last congressional election last fall in which he claimed a mandate based on the Republicans mm-hmm. who were elected to the House of Representatives. Well, I took a look at that. I've got a new book coming out called Thieves in High Places, and I've got a section in there called Wobblycrats, taking on my party, the Democratic mm-hmm. Party, for mm-hmm. failing to stand up to Bush. But what they have, this Democratic Leadership Council bunch and those, they say, Bush is so powerful, we can't challenge him. Look at the congressional sweep he had. Well, I did look at it. It turns out in the last fall's congressional elections, only one-third of the people voted in those elections, 33%. Bush got 17% of the eligible voters in America. That's who voted for his program.
17%.
Democrats could only get 15%, which is pathetic. But yet Democrats would say, well, let's try to get some of Bush's 17%. Well, what about those 67% who are out there? Mm-hmm. If we got 10% of them, we'd win every election.
And so those same Democrats, some of them are even lining up to run for president mm-hmm. in 2004.
Yes, they are.
Are you have any endorsements you want to make?
I don't. But I'm. You know, I do think I have a positive take at least this year, which is, I mean, one, we need to get rid of Bush. It's just dangerous. These people are nuts, you know. Mm-hmm. But that aside, we're at least going to have a debate this time because Dennis Kucinich and Howard Dean and Gephardt and even Kerry.
Al Sharpton.
Al Sharpton and Carol Moseley Braun, mm-hmm. they are raising some issues. We're at least going to have a discussion about those issues. And every candidate, you notice, now has to have some sort of a health care proposal. Some mm-hmm. of them are pathetic, mm-hmm. but a couple of them are very good. And we're going to have that discussion, not about this arcane, let's have a percentage program that some low-income seniors could get some prescription drug benefits of some sort. Mm-hmm. That's not what people want to talk about. They want to talk about health care for everybody, period. Now, that's something that could rally the American people.
Jim Hightower, activist, humorist, Texan, right here in Peace Watch's studios in Washington, D.C., and you're going to be appearing at the Lincoln Theater this evening. Any final thoughts on your part?
Well, this visit tonight at the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, that's the kind of grassroots activism that I see taking place that gives me so much optimism mm-hmm. and faith, hope that we're going somewhere, that we've got a progressive future in America. And this event tonight at the Lincoln Theater at 8 o'clock.
Are you traveling the country with this?
Well, I do a lot of speaking around mm-hmm, the country, mm-hmm. period.
Okay.
So I'm traveling it, and now I've got this book coming out
yes.
And mm-hmm. all that. So, yeah, I I'm lucky I get to run my mouth, basically. and serve as sort of, I see myself as sort of a Johnny Appleseed of this populist viewpoint and connecting people up. We've got a progressive movement. We don't have to create it. What we've got to do is link it up, because folks on one side of town don't know the people on the other side of town. We have all this great progressive political activity, but it's dispersed and it lacks a cohesiveness, and we need to introduce people to each other and begin to rub up against each other some, know each other, see what we've got in common, forge coalitions, and then we can begin to have an actual movement and put a little progress back in progressive.
Texas populist, humorist, and author Jim Hightower. Well, outside of the progressive movement, how many Americans really care whether weapons of mass destruction are ever located or not? Is it justification enough that the brutal repressive regime of Saddam Hussein was brought down by the U.S. and Britain, regardless of the lack of evidence the Bush and Blair administrations relied on to lead us into war? Well, Peace Watch production assistant Keith Chalgian took to the streets of the nation's capital today to pose that question to residents, commuters, and tourists from around the country. Here's a bit of what they had to say.
I believe that they are. Whether they be found, I don't think so.
So you believe the Bush administration assertion that they are there?
Yes, I do believe they're there. Apparently, they are hidden. They'll probably never be found. I'm quite sure there's things over here in our country that may be hidden, and they won't be found either.
I mean, I'm against war totally in any case. I think, like, a lot of the problems that we have over there are, if anything, because of us in the first place. I don't think it's going to solve anything.
Do you think they'll ever find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? Does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. I mean, they probably will, but I don't think, you know what I mean? They're going to do what they're going to do, and it doesn't matter, like, whether it really be there or if they say they just found something.
If they planted it.
Yeah, basically.
Well, I think truth has to be defined. And in this case, the Bush administration has been vague. He's had various advisors say different things at different times. I think some of his earlier sources should be questioned.
I think it was a big lie. I've seen it before. I imagine we'll see it again. I believe that the facts given by Colin Powell to the United Nations were completely erroneous. He cited tons of weapons of mass destruction, tons of antibacterial weapons. We found none.
My feeling is that there are none to find unless they're planted.
Well, I think it's clear that these claims have been overblown. They may have existed at one point. I don't believe that they presented a clear and vicious threat to the world. You know, we will probably see in time if this is true or not. But I don't think they're being truthful.
He did use them on Iran. That's why. He hit them someplace or sold them.
A dossier last week from the Defense Intelligence Agency said that in 2002, their assessment was that there was no weapons.
Weapons are somewhere. Weapons probably took a walk. We're trying to locate them now.
If they're not there, does it matter?
Not to me, because we'll find the weapons.
I really ain't sure. I mean, like I say, I'd still really like to know what the CIA was telling. What we don't know that has not been declassified yet. It's not looking promising about whether the books have been cooked, I mean. But I can't give a for sure opinion on that.
Does it matter if there are no weapons of mass destruction? We still right to go into Iraq?
Not without the UN support. If there were no weapons of mass destruction, we should have waited until we had UN resolution and support behind us to do it.
I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that there were any weapons yet. I think he'll lose credibility if the pretext for war was related to weapons of mass destruction and terrorism, and he can't prove that either were involved.
Does the American public care?
I think the American public will care as it is exposed both at home and abroad.
The views and opinions on the lack of weapons of mass destruction from the man and woman on the streets of the nation's capital. That segment was produced by Peace Watch production assistant Keith Chalgian. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer today was Laurel Padgett-Seekins. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Keith Chalgian, Evan Davis, Jim Bennett, and Al Hamid. Thanks to Pete Karak at RadioForAll.net and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers, Matt Bradley and Sam Husseini. If you'd like to support Peace Watch, we urge you to make a pledge pledge through our secure online website at pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.